Create Your Own Life, Episode 56.
Hey, this is John Lee Dumas, founder and host of EO Fire, and you're listening to the Create Your Own Life podcast with Jeremy Ryan Slate. Prepare to ignite.
So I just want to let you guys in on a little secret that tripled our social media following in just 7 days. Social media can be a huge asset to promoting your brand or product and is part of doing business in a new millennium. It is time to start. iBoom Media, founded by Justin Matthew, not only gets real followers, but real results. Call iBoom today at 877-223-9552 or go to www.iBoomMedia.com.
Hey, what is up, Life Creation Nation? Jeremy Ryan Slate here, and this is episode number 56 of the Create Your Own Life podcast. We have a very special guest with us today. His name is Harry Campbell. He is also known as the Rideshare Guy. He is the founder of the blog over at therideshareguy.com, as well as the Rideshare Guy blog. He had a very well-to-do, high-paying job, and just decided that because he wanted to diversify what he was doing, he started driving for Uber and Lyft and realized very quickly that he could fill a lot of needs and then was able to transition into creating a business from that and actually moving out of his full-time job and actually creating his own life and his own job. So without further ado, our interview with the Rideshare Guy, Harry Campbell. All right, so the Rideshare Guy, Harry Campbell, welcome to the Create Your Own Life podcast.
Hey, what's up, Jeremy? Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. So, Harry, I want to kind of start at the beginning with you because you have a very interesting and different business model. You had a great job as an engineer, and then you developed the Rideshare Guy. So kind of take us through, you know, what was going on and why you were looking to do something else.
Definitely. And you're right that I did kind of come from, I like to tell people now that I'm a retired engineer and a full-time blogger now, but those are kind of at the opposite ends of the spectrum. So it's a pretty interesting, I guess you would say, transition or story. So I'm more than happy to shed some light on it. And basically what it all boils down to, so I graduated in 2009 with a degree in aerospace engineering. And believe it or not, I went to work for a couple aerospace companies. Most recently, I was working with Boeing up here in Los Angeles. And really, I mean, I've always kind of had a little bit of a side hustle mentality. I've always kind of, you know, dabbled with side gigs, and I was coaching volleyball and tutoring kids and all that kind of stuff just on the side in college. Once I started working full time, though, I was reading a bunch of blogs at the time. So I actually started a few sites of my own, just kind of blogs, hobby blogs here and there, and like personal finance and travel and really just stuff I was interested in, but none of them ever took off. And I wasn't ever really trying to make a killing or make a ton of money, but it did get me really interested in the whole space of creating content in freelancing, online marketing, all of these things that I really didn't know existed. And I mean, I was looking at people who are making full-time livings, and for me, it just seemed like a really cool way to earn money. So that was kind of what got me started on the whole path into blogging and kind of creating content to make money online.
Awesome. And how did you decide, you know, though you were working full-time, you know, what was the need to do something else? Because you decided to become an Uber driver. Am I correct that was the first company?
Yep.
And then, you know, if you're working full-time, why the diversification?
Yeah. And I mean, so my job as an engineer was very, I mean, I wouldn't say it was the most fulfilling thing in life I was doing, but I definitely didn't hate it. I mean, it was a good job, right? I was paid well, very safe, very secure, somewhat challenging, not the most exciting or most sexy line of work, like dealing with spreadsheets all day and doing meetings. I mean, you know, it had a lot of the good elements of a full-time job, but it also had a lot of the boring stuff, right? The cubicles, the meetings, and all that stuff that everyone complains about. But for me, it was really just more about, I'm just kind of constantly looking for opportunities. And I think that's what it really boiled down to. I mean, I was a passenger of Uber and Lyft, and I started talking to drivers, and they were all telling me how much fun it was, how much money they were making. And then when one guy told me that he was sitting on his couch making $25 an hour because they had just launched in Orange County, where I was living at the time, I was thinking to myself, all right, well, this sounds like a pretty good gig. When you know, I knew it wouldn't last forever, but when they first launch in a lot of these cities, they basically guarantee drivers $25 an hour. And this was almost 2 years ago, so wow. Things have changed since. But for me, I was like, well, that seems like kind of a no-brainer. And so I signed up, started doing it, and the guarantees went away pretty quickly. But I actually started driving and earning decent money. And at the beginning, I was making about $20 to $30 an hour, which is pretty decent side income for when I want, where I wanted. And prices have come down since as the supply of drivers has gone up. But at the time, it was really good income. And I started thinking to myself, like, hey, I know there's people out there. I'm doing pretty well right now. And I know there's people out there who are probably much more experts than I was at the time, right? I'm sure there's people who know a lot about this. And I figured they had to be sharing it. So of course, I went to Google, typed in looking for some rideshare blogs or Uber blogs or Lyft blogs or anything like that. And I couldn't find a single one. I found articles here and there that were talking about people's experience driving for Uber, and I found a few Facebook groups, but I didn't find any type of real community, any type of real blog that was consistently producing content. And for me, kind of a light bulb went off in my head. I was thinking to myself, hey, there's 100,000 drivers right now. Uber is valued at $10 billion. And those numbers have come up a lot since. But at the time, even then, I was thinking to myself, man, this seems like a huge opportunity. All of these people are asking the same questions over and over. And it's amazing how if you slap a website behind your name, you suddenly sort of become an authority in the topic. And obviously, you still have to kind of know your stuff, but it gives you some credibility. And you can really use that to leverage and build up on that from there.
Sure. And let's kind of backtrack a little bit for some of our audience that may not be familiar with the term rideshare. Can you just kind of explain what that means?
Yeah, definitely. And so you may have heard, I mean, there's lots of different terminology, and that's the crazy thing, that the industry is moving so fast. Like, you know, the naming is almost, you know, at this point, there's so many different names for it. But it's basically what rideshare is, or ride hailing, or ride sourcing, whatever you really want to call it, is basically the model of kind of everyday people like you or I driving others around in our car through an app, kind of just like a taxi driver.
But
with a lot more flexibility and basically in the on-demand style. So, I mean, they call it the on-demand economy or the sharing economy, collaborative economy. Again, there's kind of like a million different names for it. And you'd be surprised, or you'd be amazed how many times people email me and they're like, it's not actual ride sharing. I'm like, dude, relax. It doesn't matter what you call it. We all know what we're talking about, right?
Sure.
I mean, it's like Uber. It's these companies that will pick you up and take you from point A to point B. Like, if you haven't used it by now, you're probably living under a rock. So I think most people are probably familiar with Uber. And so what my site and kind of the site that I created is basically targeting all those Uber drivers, all those Lyft drivers, and really anyone who's working in the on-demand economy. And I try to provide a ton of content and resources, information for them.
Sure. So I'm kind of interested to see what kind of resources, you know, an Uber driver would need that you're able to provide, because it just seems like a pretty simple process, but you know, maybe there's some roadblocks that they hit that I wouldn't quite foresee. You know, I haven't done it like you have.
Well, and I think that's the crazy thing. That's what I was thinking when I first started. I didn't start driving for Uber and Lyft because I was like, man, this could be a huge business opportunity for me. I can go and like teach people how to be an Uber driver. I wasn't even thinking about starting a blog when I started driving for Uber and Lyft. For me, I was just like, hey, it seems like a cool opportunity. Let's try it out. What's the worst that could happen? I hate it. And I never have to do it again. So for me, it was a pretty low risk investment of time. And I think that's kind of the attitude that I went in. And really what I discovered, though, was it's funny because like outsiders, they think, man, how hard could it be, right? You pick someone up at point A and then you drop them off at point B. Like that seems super simple, super easy. But once you start doing it, you realize that it's anything but that, right? There's this whole host of problems. And these companies also to their credit and also not to their credit, they're so focused on growth and getting more drivers and like getting more passengers and growing up and out that they kind of forget about a lot of the things like providing really good onboard training for their drivers. I mean, you know what's crazy? As an Uber driver, you can actually sign up, be approved in 3 to 5 days, and you'll never meet a single person from the company. They'll send you 3 5-minute training videos. Obviously, no one actually watches those. So you could potentially be going out and doing your first ride, never having used Uber as a passenger, never having done a single ride, and never even having talked to someone from the company. And that's kind of shows you that there really actually turns out to be a lot of pain points for drivers. A lot of them are when they're first getting started and kind of gaining, you know, a lot of the knowledge that you need, like how to get signed up and go through that whole process. But once you actually get out on the road, I mean, so the busiest times to drive are Friday, Saturday nights. And we call those the party hours, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone's out drinking and partying. That's when they want to take an Uber. And if you ever think back and tried to deal with your friends who are drunk, imagine if you're an Uber driver having to pick people up at a certain point by GPS that have been drinking. Imagine having to drop them off, get directions from them. And there's basically just all these pain points, you know, like people trying to bring in alcohol, people trying to stuff in six people in your car that you start encountering. And a lot of these drivers aren't trained in customer service. They're not trained in dealing with drunk people, basically. And so you can imagine that a lot of situations arise that drivers need help with and need help figuring out. So that's part of what I cover on the site.
Sure. And I really had no idea, just from a quality control standpoint, I really had no idea that there's no, like, real onboarding process for that, because I can see how that would definitely be an issue, especially with a lot of people that haven't run a business before. So how have you been able to help, you know, these Uber drivers and Lyft drivers, you know, create more of a business for themselves than they would have typically been able to?
Definitely. And that's actually one thing that I turned out to be something I was really passionate about, because whether drivers realize it or not, as an Uber driver, you get paid $10.99, and automatically anyone who's freelance knows that now you're a business owner, right? If you get paid $10.99, you have to now file a Schedule C, right? And so a lot of these drivers come from more traditional lines of employment, like W-2 retail, where they were paid with just a paycheck. Taxes were already taken out. They didn't have to worry about any of that stuff. But now drivers have to think about things like taxes, right? Estimated taxes, filing a Schedule C, tracking their income and expenses. Because the really crazy thing with being an Uber driver is that there's a lot of variability on the income side, right? With a normal job, you go in, let's say you have 10 people start on day one, right? All at the same job, same level. They're all going to be paid about the same amount, right? Or even the exact same amount. Some of them are going to be a lot better than others. Doesn't really matter. They're still all going to get paid about the same amount if they're on salary, right? But with an Uber driver, there's some variability there, because the best drivers, the ones who are the most savvy, the ones who are running like Uber and Lyft apps at the same time and taking whichever requests come first, the ones who are able to go out and find the times when not only there's high passenger demand, but there's also low supply of drivers, which leads to surge pricing or just more frequent rides. Those are the drivers who can actually out-earn the other drivers. So you have a lot of variability on the income side, right? There just because of that. And then you also have a lot of variability on the expense side, because as a good business owner will tell you, you have to worry about your income and your expenses, right? So Uber drivers not only have to look at their income, but they also have to think about, hey, I'm using my car, right? I'm spending money on gas. I'm depreciating my car. I'm doing oil changes, all of that kind of normal maintenance, and really factor that in. And most drivers that are doing it casually don't, but that's kind of what I try to help them think about in a much simpler, as kind of as simple a way as possible.
And that's really huge. And just to call back to one thing that you mentioned there, I'm actually surprised that there's not some sort of non-compete that exists between Uber and Lyft, unless maybe that's something that's changed. You said maybe they have both apps and are answering whichever comes in first. Is there any sort of non-compete that now exists between those two?
Nope, there actually isn't anything like that at all, because all of the workers are 1099 contractors. So legally, these companies can't say you can only work for me as a contractor, right? It's kind of like how you would think it. And there's some lawsuits actually going on over this in California that probably are going to take a while to resolve. But I mean, that's the other thing, right? You have this kind of new form of technology that's coming in and doesn't quite fit into like W-2 and doesn't quite fit into 1099. So it creates a lot of issues, but it also creates a lot of opportunities.
Sure. Well, I'm kind of interested to pull more towards what you've been doing with the rideshare guy. You know, you were telling me that the level where your business is at now is, you know, vastly different from, you know, where you ever thought it was going to be in a six-figure range. You know, kind of take us through what the growth of the rideshare guy looked like and what tactics you were employing that really helped it to grow so quickly.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, kind of taking it all the way back to the start, because I mean, that's probably where most people are just starting out or trying to figure things out. I mean, for me, I think the first thing, I didn't go into this like trying to make a six-figure income, trying to make $100,000 or $200,000 bucks a year. I really went into it because it was something I was passionate about, and it was something I was interested in, and it was also something where I saw opportunity. Like, I'll be 100% honest, I didn't have a completely altruistic viewpoint, right, doing this. Like, I just want to go out and help people, right? No, I thought that there was a potential opportunity, but it also aligned nicely with something I was passionate and interested in. So that's kind of the mentality that I was coming in with. And really, what I think helped me a lot was I really talked about it from firsthand experience. I mean, I was a driver. I was going out there driving Friday, Saturday nights, driving on the weekends, Sundays, holidays, and then talking about my experience. And not only talking about my experience, but also talking about it in kind of like a next level way. I didn't go out and say, hey, I made $25 an hour driving Saturday night. I tracked like every single one of my rides and created like little points. Like, okay, I picked the person up at this time, dropped them off at this time, and then waited for this amount of time. It took me 4 minutes to get to the next passenger, and then I kind of did that all in a spreadsheet. Clearly you can see where my engineering background came into play.
Seriously. Wow.
And I mean, obviously I didn't do that every time I went out, but I went out and did that and really documented it. And then I would write about my experience and say, hey, I made $25 an hour. Here's the exact breakdown by hour for 6 hours. And here's all the opportunities where I can try and minimize the time where I don't have a passenger, for example. And that's when a time when I'm not getting paid. And so I was really just talking about my experience driving. And it was kind of in a way, though, that I think a lot of people could relate to, because at the time, especially when I was first getting started, these companies were paying pretty big referral bonuses for referring other drivers. So anyone who was a driver could refer their friends, family, just like with your typical affiliate marketing. And a lot of it kind of encouraged a lot of people who did have platforms or who were trying to create blogs about it to really oversell it, right? Like say, hey, this job's so amazing. Look how much money I made. And also sign up with my link and we'll each get a few $100, right?
Right.
So you could imagine like how many people were out there doing that. And not that I wasn't including my affiliate links, I definitely was, but I was also being very genuine and honest about it. I was saying, hey, here's how much I made. In a best case scenario, yeah, you can make this much. But I mean, if you want to drive Tuesday afternoon at 3 p.m., you're probably not going to make that much. Here are all these pain points that I'm having with Uber, like getting in contact with them, getting support from Uber is a huge hassle. And that's kind of, you know, all of these things that I talked about, I think were very relatable to people and just very honest in general. And kind of one of the things that I've really focused on in all of my creating content is just telling it like it is, like highlighting the good, but also highlighting the bad. And then in the time since, that's what I've really focused on, you know. So as far as a content approach, that's really what I focused on content-wise when I was first starting.
Sure. And what about, you know, the actual income and business level, you know, how long did it take you to decide, you know, this is definitely something viable? I think it's, you know, time to leave the engineering job. And kind of where are you at now in terms of the income you're seeing?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, in that first year of starting the blog, honestly, I didn't really focus on income. And I think that was a really big key to my success. I mean, I took all the low-hanging fruits. If there were things like driver referrals or if companies reached out to me saying, hey, we want to give you money, then I was very happy to say yes if it was a product that fit nicely with my audience. But at the same time, I didn't spend time trying to go get like $200 or $300 ad deals or anything, $100, a few $100 here and there. That wasn't really that important to me. I really just focused on kind of building the content, building the community, replying to every single email I was getting, you know, like really establishing a good relationship with my community. And I think it was about a year into my blog where I was just starting to get more and more opportunities. And it was kind of at the point where I was having to turn things down because of my day job, right? I kind of specifically remember I'd been thinking about leaving my day job, but I was still like, hey, I'm going to stick it out one more year. Because, you know, obviously my day job was very secure. I wasn't making a ton of money on the blog yet. And I was still doing both, right? I mean, I was working full time, spending 20 to 30 hours a week on my blog when I got home every day, or not every day, but you know, throughout the week.
Right.
And it wasn't quite a grind yet, but it was definitely not something that I wanted to do forever, right? Working 60, 70 hours a week is not super fun, but it was still that I could see kind of the long-term vision and the long-term plan. And I think once I started realizing that, hey, there are opportunities that I'm having to turn down, right? I'm not able to take meetings with certain companies. I actually got invited to go on Bloomberg TV and talk about some issue with Lyft and Uber. And I actually had to turn it down because it was Friday at 12 p.m., right? And
yeah.
I had a day job and my boss obviously wouldn't let me off. And they didn't, they wouldn't have cared that I was doing this stuff on the side, but they didn't really know about it, right? And right. So for me, it was kind of at that point where, you know, it wasn't the next day where I was like, man, I got to quit this, but it really started making me rethink, like, hey, what would happen if I focused 40, 50, 60 hours a week on this project? Where could I get it to? And I think that at the time, I was still able to kind of commit to all of my duties as far as creating content and responding to emails, but I was starting to miss out on a lot of those like advertising and monetization type opportunities that, you know, frankly, like when you're starting a blog, as your stuff starts to grow, that's what starts to take more time, right? I mean, it's not so simple as if a company wants to do an ad deal with you, for example, like even something as simple as like a banner ad on your site, right? That might take hours of negotiation, and then it might be placed on your site and have the wrong graphics or the wrong links, and then they might want it in a different position. So nothing is ever really as simple as it seems. And I think it just kind of inspired me, stuff like that kind of just inspired me, like, hey, if I were to leave my full-time job and do this blog full-time, I think that I could really crush it, basically.
Sure. And the blog has generated income for you. Where have you seen, you know, kind of the greatest income and revenue sources from your blog? Is it in terms of advertising? Is it affiliate deals? Like, what's kind of enabled you to have that steady income where you feel pretty safe with what you're doing?
Yeah, so definitely. In the past year, so kind of in that year 1 to 2 period is really where I had built. I mean, when I left my job, I had about 100,000 page views a month. And that was kind of always the target I'd set in my mind that, hey, if I really need to bust out a full-time income, I think that I could scrap out a full-time income at 100,000 page views a month, just kind of off what I had learned from people in the industry and talking to other bloggers and things like that. But I could still kind of see the trajectory of my site was still on the up and up. And I knew that within a few months, I would hopefully be, you know, 50% higher or 100% higher. And really what it boiled down to as far as monetization was I had a few main sources. Well, I had one or two sources. And since then, I've kind of expanded. And I'll just go over them briefly. But basically, advertising is obviously the big one. I mean, so I'm still doing to this day a lot of direct lead generation for these companies. So Uber, Lyft, Postmates, and DoorDash are two on-demand food delivery companies. They all need drivers. And so I'm still blogging about my experiences. I still have links to sign up. And, you know, kind of the community and audience that I cultivate is one who's, you know, I try to basically, you know, teach them how to be super savvy drivers, drive for multiple services, leverage and diversify, right? So my audience kind of tends to sign up for multiple platforms. So that benefits me right there. And then really where I've kind of expanded from there is into direct advertising. So any company that wants to target on-demand workers. I mean, so for example, like Intuit is one of our big clients and they have QuickBooks Self-Employed, right? Which helps you track your income and expenses. They have TurboTax, which obviously everyone who's a rideshare driver now has to file a Schedule C and now they have to buy like the premier version or Home and Business or whatever it is, right? So you can imagine that any company really who's targeting these on-demand workers, a good place to start is Uber drivers. And if you're trying to target Uber drivers, my site is probably the best place to do it. So as far as advertising, those are the types of deals that I'm working with them. And then I've actually had a couple kind of new revenue sources pop up in the past 6 to 12 months that I really wasn't expecting. I mean, the first one that I kind of went out on a limb to try was I created a video training course for drivers. So I created a course on a separate site called MaximumRideSharingProfits.com. And basically it is that training that Uber doesn't provide, right? It walks you through getting signed up, figuring out who you should drive for, your first few rides, and then takes you all the way up to things like insurance and taxes and like really maximizing your income and figuring out when and where to drive and all of those strategies. And, you know, like I'll record case studies with really savvy drivers and things like that and put them up on my course. So that's been kind of a cool source of income because for me.
And that's absolutely brilliant, by the way, Harry. Like, seriously, to be able to set them up in the right way, that's, I think, what a lot of people would be missing if that training wasn't there.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, honestly, for me, like that type of training is really fun because your work, I mean, so I charge $97 for my course, which isn't cheap, but it's not a huge investment. But you're also anyone who's willing to pay $97 for a series of like 20 to 30 YouTube videos of me sitting at my computer is someone who's like really willing to invest in themselves and invest in their career. And so you get people who are just like kind of psyched to be there. Like they're not thinking this is a get rich quick type scheme, right? They're thinking like, hey, I'm going to watch every one of these videos because I just paid $97 for it. And I'm also going to go out and try to use that. And like, believe it or not, like this, you know, like kind of like we talked about, there are some challenges that come up and that's what I try to help people with. And so it's really you know, that's been a cool part for me, that I've been kind of like with this course working with people who are really interested in investing in their career. So that's been a big source and kind of growing source of income for me. And then just the last one that I'll quickly touch on is kind of one that really came about by accident. And I'm looking for more accidental income sources, but this is the only one
aren't we always?
But basically, so rideshare drivers actually all need a special addendum on their auto insurance that just basically allows them to be a rideshare driver. And it's not super expensive. Like in some states, it's only 5 to 10% more per month. And there's lots of companies starting to offer it in California. And it's a state by state thing though, right? Like Allstate in California might not do it in New York and vice versa with Farmers or Geico or whatever. And so we basically created this huge marketplace resource type guide that has all of the options and like all of the companies listed by state. And it was like a lot of work to create and we're constantly updating it. But agents started reaching out to us and saying, hey, we want to be listed on your page. And so we said, sure. And so I actually hired a guy and he's on a commission basis. He manages the whole thing now and he works out deals with individual agents, and now we drive traffic to it. We do one insurance article per month. We repost that marketplace in our newsfeed once every 3 or 4 months because the information is always updating. And so that's been a really cool source where we've been able to provide like a really good resource to drivers, but we also vet these agents and make sure that they know what they're talking about, and then we give them, you know, basically send them leads, drivers.
Sure. And one of the questions I have, too, is are you still actively driving, Harry, or are you just running the blog?
Yeah, so I mean, the blog is definitely what I do full time now, and I spend most of my time. But I think at the same time, like as my site has grown, I've tried really hard to still stay in kind of like stay true to my roots, I almost call it, right? Like I still produce one article a week. I still do one podcast every 2 weeks. I still do 2 YouTube videos every single week. And that's just me personally. I have a team of writers now that kind of does stuff on top of that. So obviously in that sense, I still go out and drive from time to time, and it's definitely not as much as I used to. And I mean, there'll definitely be weeks where I don't do it at all. But when I go out and try new services, like we just wrote a bunch of articles about getting signed up with Postmates, which is a food delivery app. And I sat through 2 hours of orientation. I went to all the meetings, went out and did, it was actually really painful. I was like, man, I'm not doing this again. But, you know, I sat through it and talked about it, all about it, and with articles on my site, and those articles ended up being, you know, one of those Postmates articles that I wrote from firsthand experience is like one of the top 5 articles on the site now every single month in and month out. So, yeah, to answer your question.
Well, and I think that's kind of key too to your whole model, because if you don't really have your finger on the pulse of still being out there somewhat, it's going to be a little bit difficult to generate that content as well.
Exactly. And I mean, even to take that one step further, actually every single writer and everyone that's on my staff right now actually has worked as a driver. So every single person that I hired, I actually got from the driver pool, right? I would either have them do a guest post or, you know, anytime I see anything interesting, comment or something interesting on Facebook that someone posts or something like that, or emails me, I just ask them, hey, are you interested in doing a guest post? And then I kind of see how good they are at writing, how good they are at getting back to me on time when they say they will. And I've actually ended up hiring people. One of the guys that I just hired full time to handle advertising and partnerships started off as a guest poster on my site.
Wow. Where do you see the rideshare guy, you know, brand going in the future?
Well, I mean, I think that definitely the rideshare guy brand that I've built is going to revolve around content. I think that a lot of people ask me that question. And for me, I think that there's really no shortage of things that I can talk about. And there's obviously ancillary products that I can build and leverage from the rideshare guy, which is what I'm doing. I mean, for example, the video training course is something that I've kind of leveraged off of the rideshare guy. And there will be products like that. But I think as far as the rideshare guy itself, I think that it's just, you know, it's kind of cool to have, you know, you'd be surprised like what you can do with a blog. I mean, when you type in therideshareguy.com and go to my site, it doesn't seem super impressive. Like I'm still running a $50 WordPress theme that I set up 2 years ago that my web guy has made a lot of customization to in the past 2 years, but it's not like the sexiest theme and it's not like the sexiest site. And I might refresh it or update it at some point this year, but still it's like the content I think is still super important because that's the product. I mean, my product is the content. So it's really just kind of maintaining the quality and also figuring out new ways. I mean, YouTube, for example, is something that I started testing about a year ago, and now my YouTube page is up to about 6,000 subscribers. So that's been cool to kind of figure out where drivers are and put the content in those mediums that they want.
Sure. I'm kind of curious, too, to find out what's the most, I guess, valuable thing in your eyes that you've produced for drivers through the rideshare guy matrix there?
I don't know if there's one specific thing. I mean, I do give out like a couple guides when they first sign up, but I think that it's more just like the consistency. And I know what people value most is kind of just like being up to date on all the issues that are going on with drivers, right? Like the things that a lot of drivers are think about, like for example, like Uber Pool is a new service that Uber just launched that drivers like absolutely hate.
Right.
You know, and because now you're basically have like, you're doing kind of like double the work and you have two bosses, basically, you know, you have two different passengers, and it's a great, kind of great for passengers because they save a lot of money. But for drivers, there's all these pain points. And so just kind of like talking about those issues that I think a lot of drivers are thinking in their head. And then, you know, I'll get like 100 emails like, man, this article is spot on. And just a lot of times people want to vent. So it's kind of like just being there so someone has someone to talk to. Because what's crazy with a lot of these on-demand jobs is that you don't have coworkers, right? You don't, in a normal job, you go to the, every time you get up to go to the bathroom, you see your friends, you see your coworkers, you go out to lunch with them. As a driver, you interact a lot with your passengers, but you rarely will talk to other drivers unless you actively seek it in like a Facebook group or a community or try to go meet up in person. So it's really, you have to go out of your way. And I think I kind of provide like an easy outlet for a lot of drivers to feel like they're tied into the community.
Sure. Well, Harry, are you ready for some rapid fire questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, out of all the projects you've worked on, what's been the most fulfilling for you?
Well, I guess this one's kind of an easy one for me. Probably the rideshare guy, the blog particularly, because I definitely enjoy just creating content. And I mean, selfishly, like it feels good to get emails from people that say, hey, I love the resources you've provided and I love the content you're doing. It's helped me a ton and saved me a lot of pain and anguish.
Sure. Do you have a quote that you've leaned on through your success?
Yeah, and I still don't know if it was me who came up with this or maybe I stole it from someone else, but basically it goes like this. Life is all about prioritization. If something's important to you, then you'll make time for it. And I mean, kind of the reason why I like that quote so much is because I've always had a ton of stuff going on. I mean, like I'm married right now, you know, I'm doing the blog, I'm doing all these different things. I was writing for Forbes at one point. And it's just like, I think a lot of people are like, how do you have time for this or that? And I just tell them, hey, if something's important, I just make time for it. It's not that hard.
Sure. What about one book that you've leaned on through your success?
You know, I haven't read a ton of entrepreneurial type books, and that's one thing I'm working on. I have like a bunch of books on my to-do reading list, and I'm more of like a fiction guy, but I'd say one that's probably relevant to people in this space. I really liked Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I wasn't a huge fan of the investing advice, but I really did like kind of the general life advice in regards to like looking at things that are going to be like assets for your life, assets for your business, as opposed to things that are going to like put a drag on your finances or just a drag on your life in general.
Awesome. Well, I'm actually interested. You said you're not a huge business book reader, but if you had to generally just look at your other genres of reading, what type of reading do you usually do? I'm more of a history buff myself.
I just like fiction. Like I'm reading all different, like I just read a book just now called Snow Crash, which was kind of a weird one. I think it was by Neal Stephenson. I just finished that the other day, and that was like, it's so funny when I describe it. It's like five people have asked me now about this. It's like a book about a pizza delivery guy who also is like a total G in this like meta universe, and it's just like this whole story that probably has like all these super deeper meanings, but for me it was kind of just like this cool like fictiony sci-fi kind of type fiction book. So for me those are kind of, I just like random fiction books basically is what I read.
That's great. Awesome. If you could give one piece of advice to your younger self based on your life experience now, what would it be?
So I think that if there was one thing I could tell my younger self, is that really at the end of the day, I think like experience and kind of just like going out there and just doing things is the best teacher. And I mean, I know that's a little bit cliched, but I think a lot of times people like look at other people's success and like end up spending so much time studying others instead of like going out and doing things and then reflecting on how it went, right? Going out and building a site that totally fails and then being like, I wonder why that failed. What could I have done better? And taking those lessons learned and applying it to your next venture.
Sure. Well, people have very different definitions of success. What does success mean to you, Harry?
So for me, I think success is, I mean, honestly, like I'm a big lifestyle kind of guy. I work from home. I'm sitting at home right now staring outside at a cactus. And for me, like I really enjoy having the flexibility to work 60 hours a week if I wanted to, but also to work 5 to 10 hours a week if I wanted to 1 week also. So for me, and like not seeing a drop off in my business. So for me, I'm really invested in creating a business that can run regardless of like how little or how much I'm involved in. And I'd say my business still requires me to be heavily involved, but one of my goals going forward is definitely to change that.
Awesome. Well, Harry, I really appreciate you being on the show today. It's been totally awesome. Where can our audience reach out to you?
Definitely. So I obviously my blog is a great spot to start, therideshareguy.com. I respond to every single email. So if anyone has any questions, definitely email me, harry@therideshareguy.com. And of course, if anyone's interested in becoming a driver, that video training course we talked about might be a good place to start too. And it's a long URL, so maybe we can leave a link in the show notes, but it's maximumridesharingprofits.com.
Absolutely. And that'll all be linked up in the show notes for everybody to check out. So Harry Campbell, the Rideshare Guy, thank you so much for being on the Create Your Own Life podcast today.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Well, I hope you guys got a lot out of having Harry Campbell on the show today. And I hope you're inspired for another way that you may be able to create your own life and create a business for yourself. Because as you guys have seen by the number of guests that we've had on this show, there's so many different ways that you can create your own life. And I want you guys to go over to therideshareguy.com and check out Harry's blog and his podcast. He's got a lot to offer. And if this is a way that you want to create your own life and create your own business, he is the guy to listen to. So I also want to mention to you guys that we are expanding our horizons a little bit here at the show. And I have some great interviews I'm going to be doing this week with Steve Weatherford, former punter for the New York Giants, and also James Kyson. You may know him as Ando from the TV show Heroes. So there are so many different people that we are adding to the Create Your Own Life podcast that can really inspire you whatever type of life you may be looking to create for yourself. Thanks for joining me today, to everybody, and rock on.